You're listening to the What Do You Actually Do podcast. Each week, we want to bring you an inspiring interview, a useful tip, or encouraging message to help you find your place in the professional world. Hello, and welcome to this episode of What Do You Actually Do? My name is Kate Morris, and I'll be your host today. In today's episode, we'll be talking about the Civil Service Science and Engineering Fast Stream. And we're joined by James Holpin, who's currently working as a policy officer in his fourth posting on the Fast Stream. So James, what do you actually do?
Hi Kate, thanks for having me first of all. I'm really excited about this. I do remember listening to a couple of these podcasts when I was trying to work out what on earth I wanted to do a few years ago. So what do I do? That's a great question. So you mentioned I'm in a policy role at the moment,
yeah.
But I think it's probably worth stepping back and saying what is the fast stream? What am I doing on the fast stream?
Yeah, so you're on specifically the science and engineering fast stream.
Yeah.
What does that entail then?
Basically, there's, as you say, there's lots of different streams on the fast stream, commercial, HR, science and engineering is one of them as well. It's one of the smaller ones, but it's growing. And it's all about using science and engineering and using evidence to try and influence policy for the purpose of the profession and the scheme itself, and using that knowledge in day-to-day roles in government to try and influence that. So basically on the science and engineering scheme, across 3 years, you've got four different postings across different government departments and different types of postings to get experience in different ways, from policy, which is basically supporting create and deliver a government policy of the day. Some examples could be future transport, for example, and working on future methods of transport. Other ones could be strategy roles, for example, working in the Ministry of Defence on a big sort of budget for research in sort of the next generation of defence equipment. It really ranges from one thing to another.
So do you get to choose the postings, or do you kind of get told, hey, you're going to work for Ministry of Defence this next week or something like that?
Unfortunately, you don't choose the postings, but to be honest, it's probably a good thing. So you have to fill out a preference form and you put your preferences down, and then you get given basically what you get given. And that's really good in some ways, because you get a variety of things and things you might not have even considered before. A classic sort of phrase you'll hear like all the fast dreamers say is, I didn't think I'd enjoy this posting, but after actually doing it, it was actually really, really cool. It's what I want to do going forward. So you do get to put some preferences down, and they do influence it. But yeah, you do get told where you end up pretty much.
So that sounds quite good then. It's taking out your comfort zone and exposing you to sort of different areas that you wouldn't necessarily have thought of. So going back to your original question then, what are you doing in your current posting?
Yeah. Yeah, so in my current posting, it is a policy role. It's all to do with the building regulations, which is extremely exciting, I promise.
Sounds it. It really does sound it.
But yeah, so it's in the Department for Levelling Up Housing and Communities, which is probably not one of the departments you hear about as much in the news, but it's as important. And my team basically sits between, basically have to advise the ministers on changes to the building regulations to make them safer, better for developers and all the sectors. And it's our job to take the advice given to us from the experts, translate it to something understandable, to then pass on to the minister to then decide. So basically, I suppose we're responsible for the building regulations in that sense.
What's the key element of your role then? You're having to do this advising of ministers,
yeah,
of kind of technical information. So presumably there's an element of making that understandable to people who are non-technical specialists. But are you having to have lots of meetings with the technical specialists? Are you having to read lots of reports? What What does a day look like for you?
This year on this post, a lot of talking to lots of different people. So it's my team's job to sort of create a policy that the minister is happy with and then deliver it through legislation that we'd hope to lay in Parliament to enact the sort of what we want to do. And that involves lots of different steps. That involves doing a public consultation where the public can have their say and experts. So we have to analyse those responses and then create a policy from that. Then we need to take into account an economic impact assessment. So how will this policy affect the economy? And then you have to look at a quality impact assessment. So how does it affect all different groups that are protected under the Equality Act? Many, many things. How are we going to communicate this to the public when it comes out? Putting together a comms plan. How are we going to get it through Parliament so it ensures it's passed? So there's lots of different elements where we're speaking to experts and comms teams and lawyers. And you have to take that all in and put that in the, at the end of the day into a policy that, number one, will pass, and number two, when it's delivered, it will actually work.
So it's kind of like a big project, basically, but you're kind of responsible for all elements of the project.
Yeah. So I'm not the expert, but I'm the person in the middle trying to stick it all together. Yeah, use my sort of scientific background to sort of support that.
And are you kind of getting out and about and physically going to meet all these people, or is it mainly kind of via Zoom and you're sat at home doing it, or like what's the sort of setup?
Yeah, so again, it depends really on the role. So this year it's I'm speaking to different people, but it's not going out physically and speaking to different organizations in that sense. But in previous roles, I have done that. So at the moment, across the civil service, you know, there's a hybrid approach where you're working from home and working in the office for parts of the time, which is really good and flexible. In previous roles where I was doing slightly different things, I did have a lot more discussions with people outside of government. For example, in my first role, which was in a net zero directorate, I was responsible for sort of setting up research projects for evidence gaps in net zero policy. So very sciencey, was really, really good. I had to put these projects together and then commission them for people outside of government to then go away and do them. And then it was my job to take the results from those projects and again, communicate them to the policy teams who make the policy on net zero issues. And when I was doing that, it involved a lot of speaking, going out and speaking to people and trying to work out how are we going to put this research project together, who's going to do the research. So that was a lot more, I suppose, active, looking outside of government as well.
So you've mentioned your current policy role and this net zero posting.
Yeah.
What were the other two postings that you've had?
So the other two were, the net zero posting was in the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy. Then my other government posting was in the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. And that was slightly different. So I sat in a team within an area all to do with genetically modified organisms. So I've gone from building regulations to net zero to GMOs or genetically modified organisms. And my role there was to run a secretariat for a committee, and that committee was a scientific advisory body made up of professors and experts across the country who aren't part of the government. And it's that committee's job to advise the government on all issues to do with genetically modified organisms. So I had to run that committee and again take the advice and translate it and pass it on to policy teams and ministers. And I had to run a recruitment campaign as well to get new members of the committee. So that was really cool because that was probably the most technical role I've done, because I'm involved in discussions with, you know, professors at the top of the game on genetically modified organisms. So you really need to be able to understand that and translate that to the layman within government. Then one of the great things about the fast stream, which I'm sure we can talk about loads of the other great things as well, but you get on a lot of the schemes, including the science engineering scheme, you get the chance to do a secondment. So the secondment was my fourth role, and I spent 6 months outside of government. And that could have been in the public, wider public sector, that could have been in the charity sector, or that could have been in the private sector. For example, some of my friends worked at universities and at charities such as the WWF and the Wellcome Trust. I was sent to a private sector company, and that was called Newton Venture Programme, and it was all to do with venture capital.
So, I mean, it sounds like it's been so varied so far.
Absolutely.
And using a variety of, like, your actual scientific training, but also your transferable skills. Yeah. Do you want to sort of just give a little summary of the venture capital work, just for people who are not too sure what that might be?
Yeah, no, absolutely. First of all, I knew nothing about venture capital beforehand. And again, I was thrown there to make the most of it, which is a great opportunity. And venture capital, all that means, a lot of people probably heard of it, but don't fully understand. It's just investors investing in early stage tech startups. So early stage companies that are just getting going in the tech space. And it was a Newton Venture Programme is a joint venture between a venture capital firm and London Business School. And basically, they designed and delivered programs to train up the next sort of generation of venture capitalists with an ethos of diversifying the industry in particular. So in that role, I had to be the program manager. So I was now using program management skills to deliver those programs to upskill current and aspiring venture capitalists. Then I was also, Newton had a sort of initiative to get more STEM people into venture capital, because traditionally there's not a lot of STEM people in venture capital, and it was contributing to an issue in the wider system where, because people didn't have that STEM knowledge, they weren't taking the risks to invest in STEM companies that they didn't fully understand. So I had to put an initiative together to get more STEM people involved in venture capital. So that was more of a strategic role. And by strategy, that's basically where we are now, where do we want to go, and how do we get there? So on the secondment, I did more of a program management role and a strategy role. But being able to do that in the sort of sector of venture capital, which I'd never come across before, was really, really cool. And I was able to learn all about the investment world, but also how do you fund STEM startups from, say, universities that are coming out of universities? How do you fund them from the first point to scale up to be this huge global company? And where does the government come in on that? Where do venture capitalists come in on that? Where do private equity firms come in on that? So it really gave me a big picture of how the whole research and innovation system worked in this country. And obviously I wouldn't get that if I wasn't on the fast stream. I didn't get the chance to do a secondment. So yeah, it really opened my eyes to a lot of things.
It's really interesting, because it sounds like you're getting a really broad exposure to different public sector sort of roles and functions, but also private sector and academia, if this venture capital firm were sort of linking up with universities. So it's kind of, you're covering all bases there, which is amazing.
No, absolutely. I think that's one of the key things I took from it. How best do government and academia and the private sector and even the charity sector work together? Yeah. And both in that role, and I spent a year working for the homelessness charity Shelter before the fast stream. Both of those roles sort of show to me how crucial government really is in pretty much everything, mm-hmm. which might be an obvious statement, but that really showed it to me, because when I was at Newton and at the venture capital firm, we were asking government for a lot of things. And there were it, when there was some big issues in the market, the government came in to support. So yeah, that opened my eyes to that aspect as well.
So going back to your uni days then, you did an integrated master's degree in chemistry. So where did your interest in sort of government and policy come from?
That's a great question. If I'm being totally honest, it wasn't when I was at university. I graduated in 2020, which was the first year of COVID, obviously. And I sort of finished university, and as many people do, I sat there and I was like, what do I want to do with my life? And I had no idea how to answer that question. So I basically went away and Googled and read and listened to as much as I could, pretty much everything. And then I decided a graduate scheme would be a good idea, because I wasn't really ready to commit to something yet. And it would provide really good training and opportunities. So I pretty much went about and started to apply for every graduate scheme there possibly is out there. And then there was a moment where I sort of had a light bulb moment, and I sort of was reviewed why I went into chemistry at university. And it was all to do pretty much with, obviously I enjoy science, but the effect chemistry has on everything really, and all the big challenges the world faces now, whether that's climate change or AI or global food supply. Chemistry is really crucial to all of that, and so is government, and so is the civil service. And having listened to a couple of talks as well, that showed that sort of social responsibility government has as well, especially from my shelter days. That combination of the government being crucial to solving the big problems and that social responsibility side, those two things really drew me to the fast dream. I just had a gut feeling that was meant to be. So I sort of, halfway through all these applications, I took a step back and stopped going any further through all these applications. I sort of prioritized the fast room with a couple of others as an insurance, of course, and really focused on that, and went with my gut feeling, to be honest. So in summary to your question, in a roundabout way, I didn't really know anything about the civil service or policy before or during my time at university, and it was only really through Googling, when I was desperately trying to find out what I wanted to do, that it just popped up.
It's interesting, though, that it sounds like the purpose of chemistry and the purpose of government, you saw them as really aligned. So it was kind of not necessarily the technical skills that you were gaining, you know, your knowledge of different chemicals or whatever, that's been the useful thing that you've taken forward. It's been, why are we doing this? We're trying to solve these big problems. It has this impact on every part of the natural world. And as you say, the government is responsible for all of that as well. So that's really interesting that it's the sort of the ethos behind it that was the thing that you had in common.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's what really drives me on today, I suppose. I still don't know what I want to do long term. Yeah. And I know I'll be in the civil service post the fast stream for a couple of years. And after that, I might stay for my whole career. I might not. And that's a positive of civil service. You can do that. But that's where I can't see myself at the moment being motivated by, you know, a different purpose. I feel that I need that sort of purpose to actually have an effect on the things that are most important, I feel, in society to solve today, to try and have an effect on that. So yeah, that's why I ended up trying to apply for the fast stream.
I think it's quite a common experience as well to sort of have a bit of a panic and apply for everything else and then realize actually this A takes a lot of time, and B is not necessarily going to be that successful. Actually refining your approach and thinking about what you want and why you want it will have, you're going to make a much more impactful application, but also hopefully end up doing something that you're actually interested in rather than something that just happened to be the one that replied to you.
No, absolutely. And yeah, that was one of my points. And I think we're going to come on nearer the end about tips. And I think that was one of them, to understand why you want to apply for this specific scheme and really understanding that first.
So I notice from doing a little bit of LinkedIn stalking, you have done a lot of football coaching and various volunteering roles alongside yes. part-time work when you were at university. And I wondered how these experiences impacted on your career.
I think the classic phrase, and it is true, that it makes you a more well-rounded, all-rounded individual. And that is true. That's 100% true. Mm-hmm. And another sort of go-to point is it gives you transferable skills, such as being able to work in a team and communication and resilience. And again, all these things are totally applicable and are really useful sort of evidence for when you do apply to these sort of schemes and jobs. I think, though, the thing that I've took from those and my part-time work and everything else in terms of volunteering and the coaching is sort of, before really stepping into the world of work, experiencing sort of real life in that sense.
Yeah.
So I remember I worked for a year at Starbucks before university. Again, after finishing college, I had no idea what I wanted to do, so I sort of delayed it slightly. So there's a theme there, the same as I did before the fast dream. But that working at Starbucks, like, with the public, as anyone who's worked in retail, etc., it really gives you a sort of resilience and speaking to real people each and every day. That was certainly true when I worked for Shelter, where I was speaking to some people who rang up Shelter who needed support, would come to me as my role to sort of do an in-depth triage on them and try and support them. And that was so eye-opening, and again, a real sort of life experience. And these volunteering experiences and even the football coaching, they all were the same as well. Yeah, working and speaking to lots of different people, lots of different types of people, all with differing circumstances. And yeah, it gives you a broad knowledge and experience and resilience. And yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. So that's a really, a good added bonus. But I'd say, yeah, it was that real life experience that I took from it the most.
Because it sounds like, from the start, when you were describing all the different postings that you've had, you must have to really quickly build relationships with people, work out what you're trying to be doing, what the purpose is, how they operate best, how you're going to effectively kind of communicate the best to get the best out of the other people. So the fact that you've done a lot of these different people facing roles, whether it's through a love of sport or helping people that are homeless, it sounds like that ability to adapt your communication style and build relationships with different people or deal with different members of the public who are perhaps not always the most polite when they're trying to get yep. their morning from Starbucks, actually that sounds like really good training for what you're doing in the vast stream.
Yeah, absolutely. And I probably didn't answer your first question too well about what is a science engineering fast stream, but it goes back to that a little bit. The fast stream in general is a development program. It's a training scheme for, well, the fast stream would say the future leaders of the civil service. It's a bit cringy. So it's more of like a leadership training program. And the biggest thing about leadership and working just generally, because leadership can come in so many different ways, it's not just a person who leads a team, is being able to work with people, communicate with people. Obviously, it's a buzzword at the moment and last year in terms of AI and what that will do for society and the workplace. But being able to deal with people, that's never going to go away. And that's the biggest thing about work or leadership, is being able to deal with people and get on with people.
So it sounds like those communication and people skills are really important. And we've talked about project management and leadership, organization. Are there any other sort of personal strengths or qualities you'd say are really useful to have if you're going to be both successful but also happy, actually enjoy working in the sort of science and engineering fast stream?
I think you need to have a curiosity, I'd say, because you're going from one post into another, one scientific area to another scientific area. And again, all my roles, none of them have been directly related to chemistry, which is quite important to say. And having that curious mindset, that inquisitive nature, wanting to learn more and understand, I think that's really key. Because otherwise you won't have the most sort of motivation to sort of do the best job you can and make the most of it. An ability to learn or want to learn continually is pretty important, I'd say, on the fast stream in particular.
I guess you must be quite adaptable as well, because you're having to sort of make change quite on quite a regular basis if you're doing these placements of sort of 6 months and then moving on to the next one and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. You perfect the sort of routine you have to do in the first couple of weeks of a role by the end of the fast stream, because you do it so often within a couple of years. And adapting and trying to adapt into the role, first of all, because we've gone through some examples, but I suppose on the science engineering fast stream, you can sort of split it into three sort of types of roles you'll do. You'll sort of have a role where you bring a scientific mindset to it, but maybe not working on a really scientific area day to day. Then the second one is you're applying sort of your specialist knowledge across a broad policy area. And then the third one's more of a deep specialist, where you're actually using your scientific skills, and that's a core element of your job. Whether that's as a research scientist or inspector or toxicologist. So you're having to adapt to the roles. Then you're having to adapt to the teams, and the teams are so varied in the civil service, which you get in an organisation that's 450,000 people or whatever it is now, and your role within that team. And then you're having to adapt to a new department and potentially a new location. So it is quite a lot to take on. But yeah. It's important to say everyone's sort of in the same position, and you're there for your potential. You're not expected to be amazing straight away, and it's a process, and you've got to also be able to not be too harsh on yourself at times. It's very competitive to get onto the fast stream, and it's a great thing when you do, and sometimes that has a sort of, sometimes that people might think that everyone is super competitive and go, you know, there for themselves, etc. But in reality, that it's not. Everyone's there to try and do the best and support each other. It's a really supportive network, but everyone's really learning on the job, and have everyone talks about imposter syndrome. And if you've not come across it, it's basically means that you're in a role and you don't believe you should be there, but everyone else believes you should be there, if that makes sense. And having that, being able to sort of, you know, support yourself and not be too hard on yourself, as well as having that motivation to push on, I think that's really important to succeed on the fast stream, and in, you know, anything else, anything really.
No, I can imagine that could be really significant when you're making a lot of change. And because if you're building, you're starting a new role, you're building up confidence, yay, doing well at it. Oh, no, now it's time to change again and start this. And then, oh, no, now you change again. So, yeah, I can imagine that could creep in there. And we actually did a special episode on imposter syndrome on the podcast.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So people can listen to that if they want to. I wondered what, you know, it sounds like you've really been enjoying this game. I wondered what you would say is your sort of thing that is your best thing about it, and what's the worst aspect of it?
The worst. Well, nothing's ever perfect. The fast stream obviously mark it brilliantly, but it is actually a great scheme. I really do recommend it. The main reason is the opportunity and the variation you get. So it's rare that across a 2 to 3 year period, you get 4 jobs across different sectors, across different departments in government. One might be a policy role, one might be an operational role. That variety is quite unique in a way, especially as a civil service, is you don't really realise until you get into it. It's crazy the amount of variety across the whole civil service and what it actually does. It's not really, I wouldn't say that's well understood in the general public, actually, how extensive the civil service is. So yeah, that variety is definitely number one for the fast dream. But also, you get, as a fast dreamer, because you're there in your postings to do that job in that posting, but you're there to develop as well, you get quite a lot of flexibility in a way. So you might say, I fancy going to this event, or I fancy doing this, or shadowing this person for a couple of days. And it's like, yeah, that's great. Sure, go and do that. So being on a fast stream, you sort of get that pass to sort of focus on yourself at times and take opportunities that you wouldn't get in a normal sort of structured training or just a normal job in that sense. What else? Also, I'd say the cohort nature as well, because it is a little bit like university, an extension of university in a way, because there's, in my year, there's 40 science and engineering fast dreamers, and we're all going through it together. And even though we're all in different postings across different departments, we do come together and do things, whether that's training or away days or whatever it is. You're sort of going through it together. So having, obviously, it's great to sort of meet new people and make friends, but having that support network when you're going through it as well is really good too on the fast stream. So yeah, overall, that variety gives you the opportunity and the flexibility are some of the great things I'd say about the fast stream. And it puts you in a great place post fast stream, even if you don't want to stay in the civil service, even if you don't want to stay in science. Sort of having that on the CV and being able to develop in the way you do, it really sets you up for whatever you want to do going forward.
What's the worst bit then? Because I'm hearing all these tips. There's got to be a downside here.
Obviously, it is the public sector. So even though I think it's quite a good wage for the position, you sort of coming straight out of university, et cetera, if, especially if you're in London, you are on a public sector wage still. But again, I think it's not too bad personally. You are expected to do a lot. So not only are you having to do your normal day-to-day work on your posting, you have learn development, and that's core to the fast stream that you have to do. You have a corporate objective, which is basically an activities out of your day-to-day role, that will support the department or society. So it can pretty much be anything. So I've led a STEM challenge for a STEM competition within schools across the country. I've led away days as well for the science and engineering fast dreamers, which are great, but again, it's something else to do. You have assessments, and quite regularly every 6 months, where you have to sort of prep and write up and have an interview. You have profession activities. So I'm part of the science and engineering profession, and there's activities there that you have to do. And again, really good activities. I've done some really good courses and attended events, but balancing that all, there's quite a lot to balance, and it can be quite hard, and it can be quite intense at times. And then it goes back to being organized, but also supporting yourself and supporting others is really important. And yeah, they're probably the only other thing as well is, again, you don't have total choice on where you go, and you might be relocated. But the one thing I would say in that is the civil service are trying to get more and more roles out of London across the country. So there's more flexibility now in terms of where you go. So if you were really struggling, you can definitely have a sort of conversation and see if you could work in a certain place. Yeah, so they're probably the things I'd mention. But again, it's not a perfect scheme. but it's the pros definitely outweigh the cons, in my opinion.
Thank you. That's really useful. You mentioned sort of civil services trying to change in terms of having more opportunities outside of London. What sort of, again, looking ahead, what do you think the key challenges are going to be for the civil service over the next few years then, for people who are thinking about perhaps entering? What should they anticipate or perhaps start to, you know, do a bit more research on? Anything that is worth having a heads up about?
Yeah, I think that's a huge question in a way. I think the civil service, yeah, it is different. And you have ministers that you have to, you know, deliver priorities for. So that's slightly different. But the civil service is like any other large organisation. Going forward, people are adapting to the new way of working with hybrid working and, you know, technological advancements. I don't like using the example AI because everyone uses it at the moment, but how is that going to affect things? So you've got that side of things, but you've also got the stuff that's unique to government. So unfortunately, the economic, I don't want to speak too much about politics, but the economic environment is difficult at the moment, as everyone knows, and that has a big effect on public spending and then obviously what the civil service is able to do. So it's been asked to deliver more and more with an aging population in particular, but with less, considering the economic environment. So how can the civil service sort of go forward and achieve all the goals and deliver public services and invest in the country to meet the challenges needed? In that sort of challenging environment, it basically comes down to obviously big decisions at the top, but for each individual team and each individual area, how best can they sort of lead and work their way through that challenge of that sort of macro environment, but focusing on what you can focus on and delivering the best you can on the sort of resources you have available. So yeah, it's going to get harder in that sense, but that sort of motivation and reward for being able to deliver on those challenges and the challenges of society face and deliver the public services as well, that will still remain, I'd say. So yeah, it's going to be challenging, but you want to, you know, be able to solve the biggest challenges. So there you go.
Yeah, I guess that's what you sign up for, isn't it? And I think what you touched upon earlier, that the science and engineering fast stream's relatively new and there's a gap with these venture capital firms, with people who don't have those science skills and knowledge, they can't understand what the possibilities might be. So, you know, you people who've got the STEM degrees, that gives you a real advantage. And if you're able to sort of work in this middle role where you're translating the complex information and helping people understand its potential applications, it's really doing something fresh and offering new ideas and new perspectives. So it sounds like it's, whilst it's a massive, massive challenging time, it's on the other hand an opportunity to make a real difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you summed it up pretty well there, Kate. So I won't try and add to that. But the one thing I will add, which I haven't really mentioned, is, yeah, the science engineering element. Historically, in government, there's not been too many science and engineers or people from STEM backgrounds. And for example, I think the stats a couple of years ago were 10% of fast dreamers were from STEM backgrounds. And it's not that STEM is more important or more valued than another. It's just having the correct balance. So traditionally, there's been more arts in the civil service and economics backgrounds in the civil service. So there's a real push now to get people from science and engineering backgrounds and STEM backgrounds into the civil service. And yeah, there's a big push from the top on that, whether that's the government chief scientific advisor, which started with Sir Patrick Vallance, who people might remember being on the podium during the COVID days with Chris Whitty and Boris Johnson, but he's really led the push to increase STEM in government. So it's a real opportunity to like come in if you still want to use your science knowledge, but not in a lab. I really enjoyed my master's year in the lab, but I just knew it wasn't for me when I looked at myself and compared myself to all the other PhD students. and want to use that knowledge and want to make a difference in a, you know, in a challenging environment and with challenging situations. So science engineers have a great opportunity to come in and make a real difference on challenges that aren't easy to solve. So yeah, that'd be my big shout out, really, to consider the civil service. And maybe not necessarily just the civil service, even though I think the fast stream is a fantastic sort of foundation to push on, but careers outside of labs, careers in sort of policy, and thinking about science in a more sort of strategic way that can influence basically going from the fundamental research that universities do, which is crucial, but going to the other side of things and how can I apply this? And the civil service is one way of doing it. But I didn't really consider that before. And it wasn't really talked about as much as it should have been at university.
Yeah.
And again, if you want to go into an academic career or a career in the labs, that's great because we need that. But also just consider for a second the other side of things.
So sort of on a final note then, any sort of tips or advice for applying to the science and engineering fast stream or the civil service more generally? Because we hear a lot, oh, it's really competitive, it's really difficult, there's all these processes you go through. You mentioned having a focus and understanding why you want to apply is really important, but is there any other sort of top tips that you would give?
Yeah, on the fast stream specifically first, yeah, I think that focus is really crucial because it is an intense application period. It goes over a number of months. I won't go through step by step because you can find it on the website, but basically by the end of it, when it comes to the final stages where you're speaking to people face to face, that will shine through. I think don't be too disheartened. It is competitive. People fail multiple times and then get on. Those early sort of online tests, I do still say there's an element of luck to them. So I would practice those sort of initial online tests. There's ways to practice those because it is luck, but practicing it will sort of help with that. And then when it gets to the latter stages, when you're actually speaking to people, having a reason for why you want to join. The civil service is really big on civil service behaviours and civil service strengths. And if you've not come across those before, give them a Google. It's called civil service success profiles. If you go through the behaviours, you need to have an example for each behaviour ready for the interview. You need to answer it in a certain format. There's lots of variations, but the one I use is STAR, which basically means situation, task, action, result, and you discuss your example through that. And if you've never come across these before, because I hadn't really, because I didn't know anyone in the civil service, reach out to current fast streamers on LinkedIn, or I know there's a fast stream social mobility network as well. I do a lot of outreach work. It's a really nice community, the fast stream. It's give and take, but it's all about helping each other. And I'm sure I know people do that for people interested in fast stream as well. So if you aren't used to sort of those sort of ways of answering interview questions, do reach out. Just be yourself. Mm-hmm. Because when it comes to it, the advice I was given, I've really stuck to it for everything, is just be yourself. Because eventually you will get found out. And if you're not being yourself, then are you actually going to be able to enjoy the experience in the same way? And that comes to the application phase as well. Because if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And you're more likely to do that if you can be yourself. And very briefly on the civil service and more generally, the fast stream's not the only way through. There's a big push now with apprenticeships in particular, I know from the fast stream and specific departments. Then you've also got normal entry level jobs. And I know a lot of people who don't get on via the fast stream go through a normal entry level job. And then in some ways you've got the flexibility that you don't have on the fast stream, where you can sort of choose your job and you can move when you want and you can work your way up or work your way to a destination, whether that's up or across. So you do have flexibility in that way, and a lot of people do that, and again can still be successful and be successful in what they want to be successful in crucially as well. So there's some tips there. Hopefully they're useful. I've not just rambled too long.
That's really helpful. Thank you. And for information about those different schemes and finding those jobs, and we've got lots of advice about that, the STAR method and the CAR method and preparing for interviews, we'll put all of those links on our blog of the episode. But James, thank you so much for taking the time to sort of share your experience and give your advice and tips there. I think lots of students will find that really helpful. So thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on What Do You Actually Do? This episode was hosted by myself, Kate Morris, and edited and produced by the Careers and Placements team. If you love this podcast, spread the word and subscribe. Are you eager to get more tips? Follow University of York Careers and Placements on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. All useful links are in this episode description. This has been produced at the University of York Careers and Placements. For more information, visit york.ac.uk/careers.